My name is Carrie, and I am an alcoholic. Always have been, and always will be. My home group is the New Horizons Group of beautiful Bend, Oregon, of an Alcoholics Anonymous of beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I'm super excited today, and so I want to share something with you guys. Well, first, like my mind has been going everywhere since the beginning of kind of the meeting before the meeting, because I look around, and what's cool is like, I see a lot of my service sponsees here, which is super cool, but this is the steps and I don't see one of my sponsees here. So I don't know what's up. Oh, there's one. She's waving at me. Okay. Thank God. At least I got one of the sponsees here, but I'll, you know, and to the service sponsees, it's kind of weird because they don't come to my tradition workshops. That's where my sponsees come. And I don't understand what's up with that. But anyways, I'm looking around and I see lots of people that I know and I love, and I wanted to share something kind of personal because I'm super proud of my home group right now. And this doesn't have anything to do with the steps. Well, technically, actually, it does have something to do with the steps, because I don't think that a group of unrecovered alcoholics would care as much to do this. And I just feel super proud to be part of the group that I have chosen for my home group. During the pandemic, we have a bunch of, you know, we've gotten some Zoom babies, which is awesome, you know, and they are definitely part of our family. At my home group, we meet 7 days a week online. And so a lot of the newcomers who've come in and gotten sponsors in our home group and gotten sober in our home group and are with us every day, you know, David is in here. He's one of them. He got 6 months. He just got 6 months. And so he just celebrated a half a birthday, and he's been with us every single day for the past 6 months since his day one. And it's super cool to watch, you know, him grow and recover, and the lights come on. And what's cool is, you know, my home group, we're not a international group. We're not a, you know, but these Zoom babies that have come in, they're from all over the world. Right. And we call ourselves a three legacy group. We support all three legs, which means we don't want anything less for our Zoom babies. And we want the best for them, even if they're not us. And since we're not in their locality, and we want them to be able to be part of that three leg, right? Since we're at the three leg group, that third leg that that connects them to the veins and arteries of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, we've been going on field trips, right? And trying to find home groups in their local areas for each one. And last night, well, the night before last, one of my sponsees, Amara, she's been looking for a group in her locality that's actually a group, not just a bunch of meetings, right? So we did the research. We found out when her district meeting was going to be in her local district. And the night before last, we showed up to her district meeting, just the two of us. And we attended her district meeting to see which groups in her local district are connected, right? Have a GSR, are represented. And I was busy in the chat. I'm sure they thought that I was a stalker. You know, I'm busy in the chat during the whole district meeting, like interviewing, you know, I'm reaching out to all these GSRs, like, do you believe in singleness of purpose? Are you a third legacy group? Do you have a big book study? You know, and I got a couple of leads, right? And last night we went to try one out, and oh my gosh, this group was amazing. They have a GSR, they have an IGR, they use the singleness of purpose statement, not even the blue card. They are a three legacy group. The big book study that we attended last night was the exact same format as what she's used to, because it's our Wednesday format. It's the exact same big book format that we use. It was a home run. And right before that, we went to Louisa's, which is a home, another Zoom baby. We went to Nashville, and we attended this group in Nashville. And it's this group that meets every Thursday night. And on the first Thursday of the month, they have a step study. On the second Thursday of the month, they have a tradition study. On the third Thursday of the month, they have a big book study. On the last Thursday of the month, they have a speaker meeting. And if there's a fifth Thursday, they study the concept. And it's like, there's two home runs, right? And it feels like when you've raised kids and they're off to go to college, you know, you want to check out the college that you're sending them off to. And it's super cool. It's like, it's bittersweet, but it's super cool. And so I'm so blessed to be a part of that. So let's open up the books to page 76, which is where we left off, because now we are well into action. By this time, we're on steps 8 and 9 today. We went through steps 5 through 7 last week, and now we're going to go ahead and start on the paragraph that starts out. Now we need more action, because the last line that we read, it's a controversial one. It's the line that says we have then completed step 7. So, okay, we're done with step 6 and 7. Now what? Well, now we need more action, because this is a program of action, right? That's what the whole front of this book is about. I love Dr. Paul's story, but I don't work a program of acceptance. I work a program of action. And that is the clear-cut directions outlined in the first 164 pages, the first half of the book. So we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. This is, we hear over and over and over again, right? So let's look at steps 8 and 9. Steps 8 and 9 obviously is in italics, because that's telling you that that's where we are in the step work, right? Steps 8 and 9. We have listed all persons we've harmed when we did our fourth step, and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we are ready to go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, this is a highlight of mine because it's what I call an instructional piece. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So for me, that means, you know, the eighth step is two parts. Even just if you read the short form of the eighth step off of page 59, the eighth step says we made a list of all persons we've harmed, that we did in the fourth step, and became willing, right? That's the second piece, is becoming willing to make amends to them all. So the instructional piece for me is, if we haven't the will to do this, then we ask until it comes. So this is where I get to pray for the willingness to become willing. For the willingness to become willing. The way I encourage the people that I'm working with who are not quite there yet in the willingness department, I don't like the word homework when it comes to step work. I don't. But the way a good practice that I have seen and have good experience with, that I have found it effective is, okay, let's start out with just making a list. We'll do 3 lists. Let's make a list of those that you are super ready to make amends to. Like, you know that you've wronged them. You're ready to go out and repair the damage done. Let's make a second list of the people who, I know I own amends, but that's going to be a hard one. I don't know if I have the willingness just yet. And the third list is called hell no. Hell no, right? There's that list. And sometimes there's not that list. That's wonderful. But I don't try to shame people I'm working with when there is that hell no list. I say, okay, let's embrace it. Write that hell no list, right? And I just tell them, let's put that one on hold. And by the time, now the ninth step promises come, ideally, before we're halfway through with the ninth step, right? They start materializing. And what I have seen happen, almost like magic, is by the time someone gets a couple of amends under their belt, right? And I don't know, maybe you can call this sponsorship manipulation. I don't care. But, you know, by the time somebody gets a couple of amends under their belt and those ninth step promises are starting to materialize, they like what they're getting, right? Because when something feels good, we alcoholics, we want more. And And so that third list, it doesn't seem so out of reach by the time we're halfway done with that second list. And while the second list is being executed, I encourage them to start praying for the willingness to become willing on that third list, you know, and most of the time that willingness comes so long as we ask for it, right? God could and would if he were sought, and that works across the board. So then the last line in this paragraph, which I love because it reminds us a couple different times in this chapter, remember, because this is talking about willingness. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So now, you know, we're taking our will back a little bit already, even though we're only four steps past the third step when we gave our will up, right? So now it's reminding us, remember, it was suggested at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And I have that highlighted too. Probably there are some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we've hurt. We may feel differently about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let's be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not empathize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them at the moment. And this, by the way, the ninth step, the reason why there's so much writing in the ninth step, and I've never counted pages, but let me just do that for the sake of my point that I'm about to make. 8 pages. So the reason why there's so many pages in the ninth step is because it's, you know, those who we go out to repair the damage, there's no cookie cutter. You know, it's going to be, an amends is going to look a little bit different with my husband as an ex-associate at where I used to work, as an old school teacher. You know, it's going to look a little bit different. And they go into detail, the instructions in this book go into detail about all the different, like what we're in the middle of right now is our business associates. And then the next paragraph will be the man we hate. And then we'll come up on financial amends, and then legal amends, and then ex-spouse, and then domestic spouse, and then family, and then man who is dead or unreachable. And it just, you know, it goes through all of the different types of amends so that we don't have to like try to make the same amends look the same for everybody, because it's just not. And so where they're talking right here, where it says we might prejudice them at the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and those about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. I'm going to talk after the next paragraph. So we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. So there's always a balance, right? When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. Well, common sense for an alcoholic sometimes is uncommon. So I'm really grateful that we have these instructions. The question of how to approach the man we hated, which is a highlight for me because now it's talking about those on my resentment list, right? It's talking about the man we hate. The question of how to approach the man we hate will arise. It may be that he has done more harm than we have done him. And though we have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend. That's true. But we find it much more beneficial to us, which is why we're making the amends, so that we're clean, so that we can clean up. When clean, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, in Alcoholics Anonymous, means that I have completed step 9 and I have kept up on step 10. And my side of the street is clean. My house is in order. It does not mean what it means in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy we go to him with a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. So that's the first time in these instructions that it says, it may be that he has done more harm than we have done to him. And though we have acquired much better attitude, we are still in way. Nevertheless, we. Okay, well, basically, what I got out of that is never that we take the bit in our teeth and we have to clean off our side of the street. We're not going to mention his. Here we go. In the next paragraph, under no condition, this is where they're going to reiterate it, under no condition, so not even an exception here or there, that's what no condition means, do we criticize such a person or argue. That's a highlight of mine. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking unless we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street. That's another highlight. It's saying it again, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. And in case they haven't said it enough already in this paragraph, his faults are not discussed. We stick to our own, which is my third highlight. So they're obviously trying to tell us something here, that we take our own inventory, not the other person's. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we're calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they'll offer assistance. I love it when that happens. Oh, I'm so proud of you that you've been sober. Is there anything I can do? It should not matter, however, if someone does try to throw us out of their office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam or under the bridge, however you want to say it. So that tells me that I'm going to them to get clean, to get my side of the street clean, right? My home group is in a church that doesn't allow us to smoke and stuff on the side of the street that's for the, you know, that the church is on. We have to go to the opposite side of the street, and it's called the wall because it's this big brick wall, really pretty. But that's where like the smoke butts and stuff are, the cigarette butts. I don't smoke, but there's a lot of people that go over there after the meeting to smoke cigarettes and to fellowship. And then some of us are on this side of the street, right? And we're not smoking, but we're fellowshipping too. And we can see, you know, we can wave at the people who are smoking over there. And I think of this, because I'm a visual person, as, you know, somebody dumps out the cigarette butt can over there and I can see it. And I'm like, oh my God, they need to clean that can up. But I'm over on the non-smoker's side of the street. And if I accidentally, like my gum wrapper falls out of my pocket or something, that's what I need to be worried about. I need to be worried about that gum wrapper. Even if it's not nearly as a mess of 100 cigarette butts on the ground, I'm there to sweep off my side of the street. I don't look at that side of the street. I don't look at the cigarette butts. Now, because it's my home group, obviously I can go over there and clean it up, but that's not the point that I was trying to make. So financial amends. Next is financial amends. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. I like that part. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us, arranging the best deal we can get. Arranging the best deal, we let these people know that we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So in financial amends, it's been my experience that you know, I can't just go and say, hey, I know I owe you a whole bunch of money. What can I do other than make up, you know, other than pay you back? Because sometimes it's better to go to not make that financial amends until I can have $100 bill in my hand, right? Or until I can write a letter that says, I owe you $380. Here's $180, and I'm going to give you $100 for the next 2 months, you know, so that I'm actually saying what I'm doing to make up for it. And so it's not just lip service. I have worked with, you know, a couple of sponsees in the past that wanted to make their financial amends right away, but they don't have the money to start making the financial amends. And I'm like, well, let's wait until you have some of the money to put forth. Well, what if they don't want the money because it's been so long? Then it's lip service. You know, let's wait until you have the resources to clean up this mess before you actually pretend that you want to clean up the mess. And that's, you know, and it works the same way in a marriage. I mean, in other amends too. I mean, we're on financial amends, so I'm talking about financial amends. But one of the things that really got under my skin was when I was 4 years sober. My sponsor didn't let me make amends to my husband, for like the amends, like, because my wrongdoing in our marriage, I don't know how much he wants me to tell about this, but my wrongdoing and I'll try to share in a general way. I was super controlling, if you guys can believe that, like super, super controlling. I mean, like the man had to sit to pee. Right? Like, because I don't want to clean up splatters. That controlling, like the man had to take random drug tests for nicotine because I don't want him chewing. Like that controlling. Like if the man was a minute late from work, I go out there and he gets, his car gets a complete search. It was bad for years. I mean, literally, like I signed him out of juvenile detention center because I was an adult and he wasn't when we first, you know, got married. And I took him to Oregon and I kept him out of trouble for our first like 15 years together. Like, I mean, it wasn't just, oh yeah, I was kind of controlling. No, I was super controlling, right? Like worse than I've ever seen anybody. And so because of that, 4 years sober and my sponsor still hadn't let me make this amends because I was still practicing some of those same behaviors. Not like I was, but I was still practicing some of those behaviors and making amends for something that you're still doing. My sponsor said is like putting your finger up at, you know, your middle finger in the air. And it's, you know, making amends. Yes, a direct amends. People say living amends. Well, that's not in the big book. You know why that's not in the big book? It's because direct amends is what we do in the ninth step. A living amends is what we do in the 12th step. We practice these principles in all of our affairs with every amends we make. If we're not living our amends in the 12th step, I mean, every amends should be a living amends. There should be no differentiation. So I don't get to make a direct amends unless I can live out the rest of the amends in my daily living, right? So I'm here to tell you, that it was crazy frustrating at 5 years sober, what, 4 years sober, when he finally got sober. And he's sitting in my living room. At this time, we were divorced by then. We're remarried again, but long story, we're alcoholic. He's sitting in my living room making me an amends at 30 days sober, and I still haven't been able to make him his amends. I am 4 years sober, don't you know? Like, that's the last one I haven't checked off of my list. And I'm still sitting in meetings saying I'm working steps 9, 10, 11, and 12 because I hadn't finished my ninth step. So it was very frustrating, to say the least. Luckily, and his sponsor was, and I, you know, I'm so grateful for his sponsor, because his sponsor was hardcore, but his sponsor was the type of man who said, well, if you're not done with all 12 steps, you know, in 30 days, then you're not working hard enough and you can find yourself a new sponsor. Right. And his sponsor was the type of man who sat in the living room with him for 3 days straight for 8 hours a day until they got through all the steps, you know, like it was hardcore. Like, he canceled a fishing trip to take my husband through the steps. Like, it was the way, you know, it was back in the day. And so I respected the fact that he was making an amends to me at a month sober when I was 4 years sober and I hadn't made his amends. But I didn't like it. And so, by the time I made his amends to him, we were back together. I don't think we were remarried yet. I think we were just starting to date again. And he was already living at home again after a year. And he builds this monstrosity in my backyard. I mean, I don't know if you guys can see this, but it is an ugly, you probably can't see it. Nope, because the wind, it's a shop. And it's twice as big as my house. And he has it filled with like half of cars, a bunch of half cars. He's into lowriders and stuff. And it's just in the whole backyard, like, it's monstrosity, right? But I'm here to tell you, that thing has been out there for now like 5 years, that shop. And I have stepped foot in it twice. He doesn't get a weekly allowance anymore. He has his own checking account. He doesn't have to take random drug tests. In fact, he still chews, and I'm fine with that. It's his business. And when I got to make my amends to him, I got to make that direct amends knowing I was going to be able to live it. And this is his side of the street, but I'll just share because he's not home. He had to make that same amends to me that he made at 30 days sober at 2 years sober, because he was still doing the same behavior. And now he gets to share how bad that feels. So I'm actually grateful for my sponsor, right? I'm grateful for the way, you know, it happened. I was very resentful for a long time, but I'm grateful that, you know, especially financial amends, don't go and try to make an amends if you can't back it up. Right? If you don't have the money, wait, you know, don't do a pretend amends. So moving on, perhaps we have committed a criminal offense. So this is the legal amends section. That's my notes on the site is legal. Okay. So perhaps we have committed a criminal offense, which might land us in jail if it were to be known by the authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We have already admitted this in confidence to another person during our fifth step, right? But we are sure we would be imprisoned or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense such as padding an expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried but haven't kept up the alimony to number one. She is indigent about it and has a warrant out for our arrest. That's a common form of trouble too. Although these reparations take numerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the next, to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I have that highlighted because I have heard one too many times in very specific types of meetings, which I won't mention here in case any of you guys belong to that type of meeting, that when I make amends and that second part of the ninth step that says we make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, that I'm included in the others. Nope. Nope. That's not what this book says. It says no matter what the personal consequences may be. So I don't get to include myself in the others, according to this book. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail. So it even goes into how much, no, you do not include yourself on the others, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. I'm so grateful that I had the willingness to make some of the amends that I don't have time in this hour to share with you, but that were very difficult. And I just had to trust God and trust my sponsor and trust the process. And I could have had some serious consequences, but God saw fit that maybe I had, you know, maybe I had some of his work to do and he trusted that I was going to carry that out if I was off the hook. And so I got off the hook, but it wasn't because of a lack of suiting up and showing up. Usually, however, other people are involved. This is ex-spouse. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we know had remarried because of a resentment and his drinking. Sorry, I'm adding words again. Chris, you got to point that out to me. Because of a resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life and secured a position and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." Well, we thought he ought to be willing to do that if it were necessary. But, and this is where I love how the book always says one side of things and then it balances it out with the other end of the probability. We thought he ought to be willing to do that if it were necessary, but if he were in jail, he couldn't provide anything for either family. We suggested he write his first wife, admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did. And he also sent, this is important, and he also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. That is such an important part of this paragraph. Of course, she did not. And the whole situation has long been since been adjusted. And that's kind of like the same. I could give you a couple examples of my own amends that it didn't turn out. It turned out in my favor, but I truly believe in my heart of hearts, it's because I did become entirely willing and entirely ready to face the consequences, even the worst. I mean, you can, you know, expect the worst, but hope for the best is what my sponsor said over and over again. Hope for the best, but expect the worst and be ready for that. And when I was entirely ready for the worst of the worst, that's when God let me off. I don't know how that works, but that's been my experience. Before taking drastic action, now we're on the top of page 80. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. This was important for me to learn, unfortunately, the hard way the first time. If we have obtained permission, there's a qualification, have consulted with others, there's another qualification, because when I first started working the steps, ain't no reason why I need my sponsor to go clean up the wreckage of my past. Ain't no reason why there I can't do my ninth step before step one. I'm going to go out and make these amends. Well, unfortunately, by the time I got to my ninth step, I had people on my amends list that I had to make amends for making the amends. Like, I didn't even owe them amends, but because of what I did, because I was trying to win back my place in their life or yada, 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 now I actually do owe them an amends. And that was a tough lesson for me to learn. I did not consult with other people. I did not get people's permission or consent. I didn't do any of this. And then lastly, of course, ask God to help. And the drastic step is indicated. We must not shrink. Some really good directions there. This brings to mind a story about one of our friends. While drinking, he accepted a sum of money from this story's funny for me, because it's not me. A sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money, and he used the incidents as a basis for discrediting the man. Oh, I hope they made this up as an example. I hope this isn't real, because that is terrible. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. Ah, in fact, his rival was ruined. He felt that he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right, I'll say. If he opened that old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent on him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? Well, after consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. Ugh, I love this. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow. He attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made his explanation. Wow, in front of his whole church. His actions met widespread approval, and today he's one of the most trusted citizens in town. This all happened years ago. The chances are that we have domestic problems. Oh, here's the domestic / spouse. Chances are we have domestic problems. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion that we wouldn't care to have advertised. I wonder what fashion that is. We doubt if in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife does get worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or the equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Yeah, I can relate to that. No, whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? This is a hard one, guys. Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all of the particulars. She will not want to, sorry about that. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. I'm getting really self-conscious about my reading right now. So please bear with me. I am dyslexic and the words are kind of getting mixed up. Bear with me. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not necessarily name a person upon whom she can vent jealously. So what I get out of that is that, if she is absolutely demanding that you tell your spouse who you cheated on her with, it's probably not fair. I mean, she's probably going to want to go out and seek revenge of some sort. And it's not fair to that other person to give her that ammunition, which is difficult, but they're suggesting maybe think about that and pray about it before actually doing it. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. So I love this because just like in the fourth step, it's telling the sponsor yet again that this is between the AA member and God, right? I mean, we want to run it by our sponsor, but no outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk a face-to-face combat. Okay. If we have no such complications, there is plenty we should do at home. This is family. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly, he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to his wife, to the wife or parents who for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits. And I have selfish and inconsiderate highlighted, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I'll tell you why in a minute, because it's part of my five-step, ninth-step amends process, are those two words. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who comes up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home in ruin, to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing." Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. Here's another highlight. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. So when we go to our financial amends, you want to say, "I'm sorry, here's your money back." But when it's personal, when it's a family member, the directions in the big book is don't say, "I'm sorry." They've been hearing "I'm sorry" every day from you for God knows how many years. Don't say, "I'm sorry." Say, "I'm wrong." Say, "I understand I hurt you." Say, "I need to right the situation." Don't say, "I'm sorry." It's just a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them yet again. Their defects may be glaring, but chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. I love how that can be reconciled with the chapter two, Wives. I'm just going to go back to Wives in the back of the book, because it gives the wives the same instructions. On page 118, second paragraph, says, patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in your life and they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. So the family and the wife has a rule too. The rule for her, the rule for the family is live and let live. Our rule that we've already been through is we must always be hard on ourselves and generous to others, and understanding of others. And when those two things, if they're living by their rule, live and let live, and we're living by our rule, which is we must be hard on ourselves and always understanding of the others, then these things can happen: patience, tolerance, understanding, and love, and harmony, which is awesome. It's a really good formula for a household of harmony. So the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it, which is kind of what I was just referencing by those watchwords. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. You know, you don't want to become hitting them over the head with your big book or your Bible or whatever the case may be. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. I have to remember that. I have to remember that, because I can tell you over and over again, don't you know I've changed? Look at me. I haven't drank in this long and I am, you know, I clean up my side of the street and blah, blah, blah. So what? Talk is cheap. Watch my feet. Don't listen to my mouth, right? And so my behavior is what I have to work on, not my words. I can keep my words to myself. We remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. There may be some wrong, though this part is for the man who's dead or unreachable. That's what this paragraph is for. There may be some wrongs that we can never fully make right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, without being servile or scraping. Again, I love the balance of both ends of the spectrum here. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And in my 5-point amends formula that comes directly out of this book, I'll put one up there right now, that ninth step I just did in the chat. One of the bullet points in that is that I, at the end of an amends, I'll just go over that right now. And I don't want to misspeak, so I have to, because they're quotes from the big book. So, okay. So the first part of an amends for me is I owe you an amends. Like, I have to tell them what I'm doing. As far as what comes after that, that's kind of open-ended, because if it's like, let's say an ex, someone I used to work with, a coworker or something, well, I'm not going to go into, I'm an alcoholic and in order to save my life, I have to blah, blah, blah. You know, you got to use some discernment is what we've been reading about all day for the past hour. If it is somebody in AA, let's say, that I owe an amends, they're going to know what I mean when I say, hey, I owe you an amends. Can we talk? Well, that's going to be easy. I can leave it at that. If it's a family member who I really care for and, you know, I can offer that information like, hey, I owe you an amends. Is there a time that we can talk? Because I'm working on that 12-step program that I told you I was in, and I'm on a step where I need to do my utmost to clean up the wreckage of my past. And I feel like I have made some wreckage, and I've had some harms done that I need to clean up with you. So then after you get past that first one, specifics of what I did, and that's what we just read. So we want to make sure that they know that we know the specifics. I don't get to say, like, I don't get to talk in a general way when it comes to the specifics. I don't get to say, well, I took some money from you a long time ago. No. I took $1,840 from you. Or I don't get to say, well, I was kind of disrespectful around your husband. I get to say, I asked your husband if he wanted to go in the bathroom with me. Like, I don't get to skirt my bad behavior under the rug. I get to be very specific. Where I was wrong, the harm I caused, express my regret. I was a terrible friend to you, or I was a terrible employee. And then the exact nature of my wrong, which is I was selfish, inconsiderate, dishonest. These are the examples that page 82 used. If it's money, you know, I was selfish, inconsiderate, dishonest. If it was a friend who I did something behind her back or whatever, I was inconsiderate. I was, I have to use the character defects, which is the exact nature underneath the specifics. And then number four, what am I doing or have done to set my right my wrongs? Here's $800. I still owe you $440 more, and I'm going to have that to you by the end of the year. Or I have already let the person that I spread rumors about you to know that those rumors are false. And I want to know if there's anything else I can do. I want to set right my wrongs. And then the last thing is number five is I hope you can forgive me. That hope is not for groveling. It's not, I hope you can forgive me so that we can be friends again. I hope that you can forgive me so that we can have a relationship again. I hope that you can forgive me. Please forgive me. I feel so bad. No. My hope for you is that you don't have to carry around the burden of resentment in your heart anymore because of something that I've done. That hope isn't because I'm groveling. You know, it says as people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. We aren't servile or scraping. I'm not begging for your forgiveness. I'm not going to get down on my knees and go, please forgive me. I have to have you back. And you're like, no. I'm not going to even ask for your forgiveness. I'm going to hope for you. I hope that you can forgive me. For yourself. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say, I hope that you can forgive me. That might mean today. That might mean tomorrow. That may mean one day after I have set right my wrongs. Maybe you can find it enough strength to forgive me so that you don't have to carry around that yuckiness that I put there in you anymore. So that forgiveness is for the other person. My hope for forgiveness is for the other person. It has nothing to do with because I deserve to be forgiven. It's better to forgive than to be forgiven, right? So if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase? Well, the ninth step. That's where this is in the book. And I can't tell you guys, I sat in meetings for I don't know how long, for a long time going, where's mine? They read these promises and they would call them the promises. Some groups even called them the AA promises. No, they're the ninth step promises. They only come as a result of doing steps one through nine. I didn't know. I thought, when's the promises coming? Like after my 90 and 90, after I graduate treatment, after I got a sponsor, like when's my promises? When am I going to get mine? But no, it's after having done the work from page 1 to 83. It's after having been you know, halfway through on my amends process. All of the steps have promises. My favorite promises are the 10th step promises. But, you know, and my home group reads the 10th step promises. But I think that it does the newcomer such a huge disservice to refer to these as the promises and then read them before they've even done the steps, not letting them know that what we're reading is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous after step 9. That's how you get those promises. So I always try and qualify that. If I'm asked to read the promises, I say, okay, I'm asked to read the 9th step promises. These things happen as a result of doing the steps 1 through 9. And then I will read what I'm asked to read. But so this is, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Halfway through with what, 90 and 90? No, halfway through with the 9th step amends process. we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Wow. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Again, these are the opposite, the flip end of the coin, the reverse side of the coin as the bedevilments, right? The bedevilments are no longer, because we are starting, these 9th step promises are starting to materialize for us as we are going out and repairing the wreckage that we've done. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Not my experience of being an asshole, my experience of being an asshole and then being able to repair that damage. That's what can help others. And that means I have to do some work. My experience after having done some work can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We feel we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. I'll tell you guys, I don't wake up with untreated alcoholism every day. I know a lot of you guys are going to have to pray for me and pray that I don't wake up drunk one day, but I don't wake up with untreated alcoholism every day. I don't. Because I have treated my alcoholism working steps 1 through 9. I've taken those steps. And now, because I stay involved actively on a daily basis with steps 10, 11, and 12, these promises are true. It's so funny because I used to wake up every morning and go, oh, why me? I used to wake up every morning and go, oh my God, I have to go to another effing AA meeting today to stay sober. Oh my God, me. And today, this is honesty, you guys. And if you're not there yet, please get into the 12 steps. When I wake up, this is what happens. We will see how our experience can benefit. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. And that's true for me today. When I woke up this morning, the first thing I thought of is my sponsee who's going through a move right now. That is, you know, I thought the first thing I did was, before I even did my prayers, my first thought was someone else. My first thought was texting Stephanie asking, did you get sleep last night? You know, because she's going through a lot. My first thought was someone else. That's not me. That's the program. That is God. That is these steps working in my life. That is a complete psychic change, as it says here. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. That has changed for me. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And again, that comes from Bill's story, right? He saw that God was doing for him what he could never do for himself. Page 11 on Bill's story. Are these extravagant promises? Oh my God. One of the worst AA meeting chants I have ever heard was, we think not. Why? Well, once we're a recovered alcoholic, absolutely we think not. The people who wrote this book, the recovered alcoholics, the 100 people who are writing this book who have done the work up until 9, they have a right to say, we think not. But look up the word extravagant. If you're new coming into the rooms, And you're just chanting along with everyone else saying, yeah, no, we think not. Those aren't extravagant promises. Look up the word extravagant and then read these promises. And the correct, honest answer is, hell yeah. Yeah, they're extravagant. They're impossible. This stuff could never happen for me. So this mindless training the newcomer to just chant these mindless, we think not. It's like, are we building a cult or are we trying to help save lives and better lives here? You know, no, the honest answer is no. Yeah, these are extravagant promises. For someone who hasn't done the work, these sound extremely extravagant. But after we've done the work, after we've gone through this, after we're finally on page 84, no, we think not. Why? Why do we think not? Well, because they're being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize if we work for them. Somebody remind me next week, because I'm going to open it up for questions, to share my previous experience on the ninth step promises. Well, and if I miss it, I guess just your guys' loss.
Just share it now. Share it now, because we've got time. We don't have questions.
Okay, so I'm going to share it now until Dee says that we have some questions. So here's another thing. Here's another thought about the ninth step promises. And this is just my experience. It might not be yours. I hope it's not yours. And I hope it's not the newcomer's experience. But we're almost to the 10th step promises. They are amazing. They are the carrot before the horse. They are extravagant promises. Like, oh my God, they are why I came into AA. And we'll talk about those next week during my favorite step. But the ninth step promises, I was so sick coming into the rooms, okay? And I hate to admit this, but I was so selfish and self-centered that I didn't care about being selfish and self-centered. Like, I didn't care about any of your promises. I just wanted to know how to not drink and not crave alcohol every freaking day. That's what the 10th step promises are, just for a preview for next week. But I didn't care about all of this stuff about self-seeking, slipping away, fear of, you know, all this stuff. Like, I don't care about not hurting people anymore. I don't care about any of that stuff. Like, I didn't. I just cared about me. And I don't even care about changing. I just want to know how to not drink, right? I'm here because I can't wake up without puke on me when I drink. I can't wake up remembering what I did last night. And unfortunately, the way I heard the ninth step promises was booze did for me all of this stuff. Liquor is how I got this stuff. When these were read, I don't get triggered today because I'm a recovered alcoholic and Tuesday was a trigger. But if there was such thing as a trigger when I was new, hearing these promises were a trigger for me because I knew how to get this stuff. This is what I heard. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Halfway through with what? Well, I was amazed before I was halfway through my first beer every night. Like, I was amazed at what half a beer did for me. It set me up, right? It lit me up. It made it to where I could breathe, right? I knew where to go to get this. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Why do you think I drank? By beer two, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. I could take a deep breath. My shoulders fell. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. That's why I drank. I didn't feel guilty about my past. I didn't want to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. Yeah, by about beer four, I really did know peace. I could sit and be serene with my drink. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see that how our experience can benefit others. I'll tell you what, by beer six in the bar, I could tell everybody how my experience can benefit you. I had all the answers and I was willing to share them with you. I knew exactly what was right for every single person in the bar. the feeling of uselessness and self-pity would disappear? Absolutely. I was like the know-it-all. I was an attorney. I was a doctor. I was whatever you needed me to be. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Oh yeah. By about beer 7, I gained a lot of interest in my fellows. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life would change. Yes. That's what booze did for me. It changed my whole attitude and outlook upon life. That's why I drank. Fear of people and economic insecurity would leave us. Oh yeah. I'd be broke, but guess what? Round's on me. Everybody, drinks are on me tonight. I have no fear of financial insecurity when I'm drinking. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Oh yeah. Like I'd be driving and there'd be those blue and red lights behind me. And I'd be like, okay, everybody, I got this. I intuitively know how to handle this situation. Just let me do the talking. Like booze did all of this for me. This is why I drank. We will suddenly realize that booze was doing for me what I could never do for myself. And that's how sick I was coming in. That's how sick I was. I'd hear those promises and I would want it. And I don't know about you guys, but an alcoholic like me, I got no patience. I know how to get that stuff. And I remember leaving a meeting and going to the bar. That's before I was a recovered alcoholic. Thank God these promises have come true for me in my life today, but they're not even what I wanted when I got here. I just wanted to know how to not drink. I didn't know how to not drink. And the 10th step promises are like the carrot before the horse for me. I wish I would have heard those. And that's why my home group reads those at the end of the meeting, because that got me into the work. So with that, we'll pick up on the 10th step next week. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Yay! All right. I should unmute everybody to let them clap just to hear that sound. I want to hear that at the end. I'm missing that. All right. So you guys, let's see. I don't think I have any questions yet unless my computer's broke. I just can't believe that. I mean, I know Carrie's good, but you guys have not a question. Let's look. Oh, I think I got one. All right. I'm guilting you guys into them. Check this out. All right. You're going to love this, Carrie. Here we go. Day 83. For the sake of recording, I'm going to tell you, you know what? Welcome. Please stay with us. We got a gentleman here asking you, I keep getting stuck on step 4. I don't know why. I feel like I have a mental block. Any advice? And I'm going to tell you, please stay after the meeting. We have some gentlemen here that'll love to speak with you. So please stay. And we have a newcomer pamphlet as well. So please.
So I don't know about getting stuck on step 4 because my sponsor gave me exactly 2 weeks to get it done. And what didn't get done, she was going to help me with in my 5th step. We got up off our knees from doing the 3rd step prayer and she took out her planning book and we planned our 5th step day together. And so I had exactly 2 weeks. My only, I guess, advice, since that's the word that you used, would be exactly from out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fact finding and fact facing mission, not a feeling finding and emotion having mission. That's what the 5th step is for, in a safe place to have those feelings and emotions with another human being. But don't go into that neighborhood alone if you're not recovered yet. Like, just fact finding and fact facing. Just look at the stock and the trade, just like the big book says. And you can have those feelings and emotions later. So stay out of your head with it, or stay out of your heart with it. Do it with your head. And then the 5th step, you can bring in the heart.
All right. Awesome step. And I'm going to tell you again, Jeremy, please stay after the meeting. We have, quite a few gentlemen here tonight. One of them I know in specific that, we'll be able to talk with you, after the meeting. So, and add a little more to that as well. Let's see here. What else do we have? Financial, let's see. Page 118 was the rule to the wives. What was the alcoholic's rule? Page sentences. Somebody's asking you to go over that.
We went over that in the 4th step too. I don't have that page memorized, but let me look. It says the word for word is, the rule is, we must be hard on ourselves and always considerate of others. But I am Maybe somebody else has the page number. Hang on. As we turn to the list, we're prepared to. I think it's at the beginning of the fourth step. I should have it highlighted.
Amber, find that for Carrie while she's answering questions. Page 118.
Oh, no, page 118 is the rule for the wives. I thought that I was being asked what the rule is for us.
Okay. Let me double check that chat. Hold on. It says page 118 was the rule to the wives. What was the alcoholic's rule? Yeah, you're right. Page and sentences. You're right. I'm sorry. I'm just reading like a robot. I wasn't even listening what I was reading. Okay, let's see.
Oh, okay, page 74. It's on page 74. And it's on the, it's the last line of the second paragraph on page 74. It says, the rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others.
There we go. Yep, I got that highlighted at the bottom. Okay. So let's answer another good one we've got here. Thank you, Carrie. Do I get to pick which defects I get to ask my higher power to take from me in step 7?
I love that one. That was last week.
I knew you.
But yeah, I did pick which defects that my higher power needed to remove from me and when he needed to remove them. And it didn't work out so well for me. And I got a bunch of resentments, and God was the first one on my resentment list after he did not see fit to remove the resentments that I needed him to remove when I needed him to remove them. And I'm just going to turn to the seventh step prayer because it's worded so brilliantly, much more so than I could ever do. Okay, so why 6 and 7 are so small in the big book, which I made crazy difficult and complicated for myself. I thought 6 and 7 are incomplete. You know, maybe that's why the 12 and 12 was written. Maybe that's why new pair of glasses was written, drop the rock and all this other stuff that I tried to, you know, make it more complicated, even though all I needed to do was keep it simple. The reason 6 and 7 are so small is they're not steps that I have to do. Those are God's steps. The work I have to do to prepare for 6 and 7 are in 4 and 5. That's why 4 and 5 is so much work. but 6 and 7 is where I get to, I have emphasized willingness. So now in 6, I have to be willing to let God remove these things that I find that I have found objectionable, right? And then step 7, I get to be entirely willing and ready to let God take everything, the good and the bad, not the ones that I think he needs to take and when, but I have to be willing to let God take it all. And once I'm entirely ready, then I can say that seventh step prayer, which is my creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, not the character defects that I get to pick and choose, but all of me. Good and
love
bad.
It.
Good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. Here's the part I missed, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I was asked to speak at this big conference 3 years sober, and everybody else who speaks at this conference is like 100 years sober. And I'm like, oh, I can't do it. And I was telling my sponsor, well, because I declined the invite. And my sponsor's like, why did you decline? And I'm like, well, I'm not ready. And she's like, why don't you think you're ready? And I said, because God has not seen fit to remove this defect, this defect. And I understand that this is still true today, even years later. He has not seen fit to remove the tone that I have of this like dictatorship of like this, I know what's best tone. And I don't know what that's about, but my sponsor says that maybe it's the passion that God is using in me that maybe some people need to hear. Some people want to puke when they hear my voice, but maybe some people, you know, which is why I think God needs to remove that now, right? But some people might hear me who can't hear other people. And the things that I'm willing to say that I try to put a filter on for the most part, maybe some people need to hear. Now, I can't use that as an excuse to run my mouth, but I do have to let God know you have permission to take anything anytime you want. And I am completely ready and willing. Mm-hmm. And then in God's time, not mine, he takes those character defects that stand in the way of my usefulness to him and to my fellows.
I'm loving that. That's awesome. Thank you, Terry. Yeah, I like your voice and I feel the same way about mine sometimes. I can identify. All right. So we have, there's a good one in here. Another one that I missed. I didn't realize was a question. So my sponsor and I have not worked step 9 yet, but it seems like these promises, another person that's in here that I'm so happy to see as well, Chesapeake, I'm so glad, 82 days, woohoo. But it seems like these promises seem to be happening for me. If it is not the promises happening, what is happening? I feel really good.
Well, I absolutely love some of the, what I call the newcomer promises, right? Which is, wow, I'm not waking up drunk every morning and I'm not puking and I know where my money is and what I did last night. And those are some awesome promises that you get right away. And they can actually, you know, really start making your life look a lot better. There was this guy who my husband's home group is at a homeless shelter. And he got bombers before we were even online, right? Like it was a constant humorous thing going to his home group because you would literally have bombers coming through and saying some things in the meetings and that were not alcoholic and they were just there to bomb the meeting. And it was pretty entertaining. But one of the guys who started off a bomber and then actually joined the fellowship, because we showed him love and tolerance and kindness, little Timmy, he's a character and he's out there right now. So you can pray, say a prayer if you want, but, I remember when little Timmy first got his 90 days. Now he never made it much farther after that, but he got 90 days and his grandma gave him $2,000 for, you know, a 90 day present. And I remember him sharing it at my husband's home group. These promises, he always talked in the third person. These promises are starting to materialize for little Timmy in the form of cold hard cash from my Nana. And unfortunately he took that $2,000 and he went way out with it. So, you know, that we learn in the later chapters too, in working with others and what we can do and what we can't do for the recovering alcoholic. But yeah, I think that there's newcomer promises, but I think the ninth step promises that start to materialize in our lives, for me, happened as a result of the ninth step.